The idea of legacy not being something that you can feel or touch or look at, but really be deeper than that. The ways that you have touched people and made people feel.
What's up, folks? Welcome to episode 10 of Coming Up Podcast. I'm Matt Schumacher. Our guest this week is the incredibly talented, award-winning director, Nate Townsend, who is also a dear friend of mine. And his talent is surpassed only by just how tremendous he is as a human being. So I'm thrilled to have him on the show this week. It was an incredibly interesting insight, not only into his life, but into his most recent film, a feature documentary titled Wake Up: Stories from the Front Lines of Suicide Prevention. And the film is linked to Project Wake Up, a foundation that was started a number of years ago aimed at suicide prevention by raising awareness, breaking down the stigma surrounding mental illness, and taking the issue to the governmental level and seeking legislative change. It's just a fantastic movie. It's received massive critical acclaim over the last few weeks after debuting at the We Are One Film Festival, which combined the top 20 film festivals in the world, think Cannes, Tribeca, etc., and they produced this film festival on YouTube due to the current coronavirus pandemic. But Nate and I talk a lot about the process of creating this film, its meaning in the community and to him personally, and what his hope is for the film going forward. We also talk about Nate's journey into filmmaking and storytelling, what inspired his passion, the influence of his brother Alex and his dad Tom, both of whom have passed away, his dad most recently in October, and how he dealt with those losses and overcame them to a point where he could use their memory and their honor as inspiration, not only for his career, but for his life, and how they gave him direction and sort of ignited his passion and his energy and his drive. And Nate also gives us a sneak peek into his next project, which is already in the works. It's a script that he began writing at the start of coronavirus, heavily influenced by the memory of his dad and his brother and the creative process that has gone into that so far. It's a fantastic conversation, incredibly insightful, and I'm so thankful to Nate for his honesty throughout the course of our conversation as well. So without further ado, here we go. It's coming up, episode 10 with Nate Townsend. All right. It is my distinct pleasure, honor. I'm humbled to have the great Nate Townsend on the Coming Up podcast. Welcome to the show, my friend.
Thank you, Matt. I am a fan of the show. I'm a huge fan of you, and I'm just blessed to be here. So thank you for having me.
Well, you and I, we go back a pretty decent ways. It's hard for me to believe, but we graduated high school 10 years ago. Since then, you've been kicking butt. There's a lot of things I want to get into over the course of this show, but I think what you do, writing, directing, and then what you do when projects come under the umbrella of your LLC, which is more all-encompassing, is so interesting. There's so many different facets to what you do. For some people who may be listening to this show and have never been exposed to a director before or a conversation with a director before, how would you describe what it is that you do on a commercial shoot or on a film?
Sure, that's a great question. I think, you know, when you're getting into filmmaking, there's a lot of roles that can kind of get confused between writers and producers and directors. And essentially, as a director, I'm kind of in charge of all things creative, as my producer is kind of in charge of all things opposite to that, so business and logistics. So as far as what I'm doing on a commercial set, or any film set for that matter, is just kind of all things creative. So I work with various departments, you know, between the camera department and working with my director of photography, or art and set department, and working with actors to, you know, get the best performance out of, you know, our cast. Sort of all things creative that have to do with the project sort of run through the director. So it ends up being a lot of managing, depending on the scale of the project. So on one project, I might be totally hands-on everything. Other projects, I am just kind of working with each department head and making sure everybody's, you know, kind of on the same page.
That's so cool. And, you know, one of the themes that I've noticed with pretty much everyone who's come on this podcast is this idea of pursuing a passion and kind of going after a dream. And certainly that's something that you're doing in pursuit of your directing career and your filmmaking career. What inspired that passion for you? What inspired you to sort of pinpoint this as the career that you wanted to follow?
Yeah, so I would trace that all the way back to when I was a little kid. My older brother, he was in seventh grade at the time, and I was in elementary school. And he had this assignment where he went and he interviewed six different U.S. D-Day veterans. And this was, you know, kind of back when the last of those guys were still kind of kicking it and telling their stories. And he put together this feature film kind of with the help and guidance of my dad. And it ended up being something really successful and something that I watched him and my dad really bond over, and something that was a real source of pride for him. And so at a very young age, you know, third, fourth or fifth grade, getting into filmmaking was something I saw as a really, you know, kind of cool opportunity, again, that I saw my brother do. And then my dad was in the advertising business and owned and ran Rogers Townsend here in St. Louis. And so I grew up kind of watching him do commercial production. And so kind of getting into film and doing storytelling in that way was absolutely something I've always, you know, kind of had an interest in.
And so you take that interest, you go to LMU, Loyola Marymount, for college out in California, one of the most prestigious film schools in the country, and you pursue that passion now as a career. And I think one of the hardest things to do, especially when it comes to pursuing your own passion, pursuing your own path, and really getting out of your own comfort zone, is to start. And I'm curious for you, Nate, how did you get your start? Because it's such a competitive industry too. You're out in LA, everyone wants to be in the entertainment industry, in the filmmaking industry, in the TV industry. How did you get your start to get you going to where you are now, which is a rising star in the business?
Yeah, I appreciate you saying that. And I think there's a whole lot of crossover between, you know, your industry and mine and a lot of the people you've had on your program, whether that be the, you know, Sansones and the Normal brand or other sort of kind of sports and entrepreneurship endeavors. It's one of those things where at the time as a college student, I would ask a lot of kind of my mentors and other directors working in the industry, you know, what do I do to get to where you are? And each person kind of had a different answer. And it didn't take me long to realize there's just not really one direct ladder to climb to get there. There's not anywhere I can kind of start passing out coffee and eventually get that job. So the one kind of consistent piece of advice that I heard and that I certainly relay to younger folks that reach out to me now is just kind of dreaming that sort of thing into reality. So just I wanted to be a director. So I just simply directed as many projects as I could and continued to release content. And sort of after a while, I had enough kind of under my belt that I went off and did on my own that other people started calling me that, you know. And it's one of those things where you kind of just got to go out and do it. And it's absolutely a matter of at bats, you know, every project you do and money that you're investing into your projects. But I learned at an early age and during college that if I wanted to be a film director, that was something that I was going to need to do kind of right then and there with the tools that I had with me, which now for, you know, all film students is, you know, something as simple as your iPhone can record, you know, high definition video and anybody can pull their friends together and shoot something. So being a storyteller is in kind of everyone's reach now. And that's something that I was, you know, kind of grateful enough to go into film school with, you know, the DSLR age and kind of having those tools accessible to me.
Seriously, I can remember in college, like sophomore, junior year, I'm doing projects for my journalism classes and I got to go check out the big camera and the tripod and all this different equipment. And that wasn't really that long ago, but now you can go shoot as high a quality, if not more, with an iPhone 11. One of the things that I think is really fascinating about your time in college, especially as you got close to the end of college, was that you started your own LLC. which helped you bring in some bigger projects right after you got out of school. What prompted you to start the LLC in college?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think, again, to speak to that little, just to that idea that you can't really fit this job title into a box, and every project brings its, you know, different set of challenges, and just for the need to be malleable and to be a production company kind of when I needed to be, and then at other times be a freelance director to be able to work kind of under a different production company and kind of give myself that scalability and that sort of ability to kind of call myself and my business whatever it sort of needed to be to get that one particular job, whether that means me kind of selling myself as a production company or selling myself as a singular director. And a lot of that was faking it till you made it, you know, for me towards those later years of college and then early after college with one of my first jobs doing St. Louis University's TV campaign. You know, I needed to have some sort of legitimacy. So having that LLC gave me sort of that name and that credit and had that LA address on it and certainly helped in those ways. And then also from a technical standpoint, made it possible for me to do those projects, and you know, the producers on board are sort of kind of more in charge of that sort of thing. But it helped just sort of legitimize that idea again of me becoming a director. You know, if you want to be a director, then go out there and open up that LLC and get started. So it was just one of those things that kind of helped legitimize what I, you know, wanted to do.
Yeah, gosh, I love that. I love the part about having the LA address and kind of how that, whether it should or not, validates you and kind of puts you into a different category. And then people look you up and they say, oh, Nate Towns in LLC, he's in LA, let's give him a call. That's a great idea. And then, you know, since then, it's been one project, one job after another that has sort of elevated you to this point in your career. And you've won a number of awards. You've won a Gold Addy Award, which is one of the most prestigious awards that you can win in advertising as a creative. You've won an Emmy for the work that you did on the promo video to bring Amazon to St. Louis, which was voiced over by John Hamm. But the last two projects you've done have really started to become your breakthrough projects. The commercial with AT&T right before coronavirus, which had a budget of nearly $1 million. And then the other project, which is getting tons of buzz right now across the country. It's a feature documentary titled Wake Up, Stories from the Front Lines of Suicide Prevention. It was recently released at the We Are One Film Festival a few weeks ago, and since it has won tons of critical acclaim, tons of press coverage, write-ups in IndieWire, The Hollywood Reporter, some of these massive publications across the country. And that's the project I really want to talk about right now, Nate, because, you know, first of all, it's a huge project for you individually, and the acclaim that's now coming, huge for your individual career, but more importantly is what this film is doing for the community and its service to society. So before we jump deep into the film and its creation, for those who don't know, what is Project Wake Up and what is the Wake Up documentary all about?
Yeah, that, you know, Wake Up is one that I'm sure your St. Louis audience will be familiar with. It's, you know, there's a group of kids that went to Mizzou and lost their two of their best friends to suicide in the course of a year or two, and they got together to start this foundation and have in the time since, that was probably 6 years ago, I was still in college, they started that foundation and were just really committed to a number of things, but one of those things was to make a feature documentary that could kind of honor their friends but also bring attention and awareness to this issue. So Project Wake Up is a foundation that I've just kind of been intimately involved with for years. And it wasn't until just a couple of years ago that they had approached me, having raised about $250,000, which, it, you know, 6 years ago was the amount that I told them, you know, that's the bottom line. If we're gonna make a feature documentary, that's about how much it'll cost for us to kind of, you know, do it in a really scrappy way. Again, you know, that AT&T commercial was almost $1 million. It was a 1.5 day shoot and a 30-second ad. This is a feature film, 90 minutes. You know, with a quarter of that budget. Mm-hmm. So it sounds like a lot to some, but it's really, really little. You're kind of employing people for a year. So anyway, it was a big risk, but it was a topic that was, you know, really important to me, and a film that we knew could really make a difference. And again, you know, when we finished that film, we kind of found ourselves, or at least I found myself, at a lot of the places that I find myself in my, you know, short career so far, where I kind of hit this wall, and it's like, you know, how do I, you know, thousands of films are submitted to these festivals every year, you know, hundreds about mental health. How do we break through that noise with the sort of limited connections that we have? And, you know, breaking into Tribeca and Sundance and those sorts of communities are very different than kind of the commercial and advertising communities that I've already kind of become familiar with. So it was a whole new challenge to try to get that out there and into the right hands. And we've always believed in it. And it took until COVID for it to get admitted into a big festival. And then it was the We Are One Global Film Festival, which the 20 biggest film festivals in the world, Tribeca, TIFF, Cannes, Sundance, combined forces to hold this singular program on YouTube. So we were admitted into that. And right after we were admitted into that, you know, the press started coming, and it was, you know, absolutely a dream come true to get written up in some of those publications, you know, Variety and Hollywood Reporter and IndieWire and some of these sort of the New York Times and Washington Post of the film world. You know, I live and die by these publications. So to have some of the critics that I know, or at least know of, write about the film, and was a surreal feeling, and kind of giving the film that recognition we've always felt that it deserves was just very validating for us. And you know, most importantly, we feel that this film can save lives, and so this kind of helps push that towards that, the, you know, top platform where we can reach, you know, the most amount of people. So right now we're totally still in the midst of it, but it's been really exciting the last few weeks as far as that's gone.
Yeah, and there's many things I want to get into about the film specifically, and its aim, its goal, your passion for the project. But first, let's back up a little bit to one of the first things you said, which was that, you know, you had started right out of college doing a short film for Project Wake Up. And this idea was floated around at the time of maybe doing something longer, but the budget would need to be bigger. Some years go by, you're working full time as an in-house director at an ad agency in St. Louis called DDB. And Project Wake Up comes back to you and says, "We've got the money. We want you to do this." And you ultimately, of course, decide to take on the project, which means leaving behind your full-time sort of comfortable job and pursue this project, knowing that less money, you're going to be moving back to LA, all these different things. Why did you take that plunge, knowing that you'd essentially be taking a year or more off of making what many would consider a sustainable income?
Yeah, no, I mean, it was, it's a great question. And it was a tough decision. It was one that I knew was sort of looming, you know, as I was kind of going down this path of commercial directing, and that was sort of snowballing. I'm also watching Project Wake Up and their foundation very much do the same and snowball and, you know, start raising a ton of money and awareness. And So I knew that it would come, you know, that they would get that money and I would be, I would be facing this decision. And, it took a lot of convincing of myself and my team of filmmakers, as far as, you know, how can we, you know, what was really important to me was making a film that could break out of this wonderful community in St. Louis that has been so supportive, and kind of the story of Brian Candace, who's a student who tragically died at Mizzou. How do we take that and use that as a platform to make a film that has a much wider appeal and just a broader scope, so that we can, you know, yeah, I'm going to take a year away from this commercial thing and not make any money, but it will ultimately be, one, something, you know, an important film that can be effective in the field. But also, of course, selfishly, you know, I'm thinking about what does this mean for me and what does this mean for my career? And kind of banking on that endeavor as kind of helping push me forward, if not directly vertical, a little bit sideways and diagonal, but still, you know, closer to that ultimate, you know, goal and dream. And so, yeah, for those reasons, I decided to take the risk and kind of take the leap, and timed it with a move out to Los Angeles, where core group of filmmakers that I work with are all based. So, yeah, I kind of packed my bags and quit my job and moved to LA and sort of got after it in that way. And it was definitely a big risk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a huge risk. You leave behind everything that you had going for you working at DDB in St. Louis, and you take on this project. And, you know, of course, it took over a year and a half of your life to pour everything you had into this project. You weren't taking on anything else at the same time. It was all in on this Wake Up documentary. And so I'm curious, when you're going through it, I'm sure there are moments of struggle, of wondering, my goodness, you know, is this really going to pan out? Will this film be successful? And then I guess afterwards, Nate, how do you assess the success of the film after it's wrapped and now it's into film festivals and you're in conversations about distribution?
That project was definitely made worth it. To a huge extent, when we finished it and we were, you know, we did some of our private screenings in St. Louis, and we were hearing back from people whose lives were really profoundly changed, or some lives were actually saved. And sort of hearing that, and then also giving voice to a lot of these communities that previously didn't really have a platform. And it already felt like a very fulfilling project to me. I was happy I had done it. I was proud of it, no matter what its fate would be, you know. But of course, in the back of my mind, I always had this, you know, dream from the beginning of, you know, wanting to get that film into one of these top tier festivals and giving it, get it, you know, that sort of top tier press. And so I, somewhere along the way, I sort of redefined what success meant for that movie. And that's not a bad thing, you know. I think success a few months ago to me meant, you know, making a big footprint on college campuses with this film, making it a film that's very important in the mental health field and that people in the mental health field can rally around, which, you know, they had already been doing at that time. And then the film would be available online for, you know, streaming for, you know, whether we sold it on Amazon or iTunes or whatever, for people to access when they needed it. You know, the gamble paid off in many ways as we were just doing the project and the learning experience and all that. But really, you know, in the back of my mind, that something that I really was looking for the movie seems to kind of magically appeared over these last few weeks. But it's, I think once I took that leap, it was a no regret situation. And even as we were making the film and I had my doubts and concerns and fears, I never let it be something that I would regret, you know. But yeah, absolutely, having it see the sort of success it's seen now over the last few weeks, and there's still, you know, quite a ways to go, but it's certainly feeling like it was a great, you know, great step for me to take.
You know, I watched the film myself last night, and what really jumped out to me was just how real the suicide epidemic is. Nearly 50,000 recorded suicides in 2018, and that's the recorded ones. Who knows how many unrecorded there were? And the other thing that really struck me was just the diverse group of people whose stories you told: college students, LGBT, veterans who either attempted suicide and lived, or telling the stories of the families and the friends who are now dealing with someone that they loved who actually committed suicide. And to me, what was so special about the film was that it worked not only to break down the stigma around mental health and suicide in particular, but also to educate and empower. And you've talked about this a little bit. You know, all these accolades have now come out over the last 3 weeks. And you mentioned how some of the private screenings in St. Louis, you've gotten such meaningful feedback from people whose lives have been bettered or saved having watched this film. But what is your ultimate hope for how this film is not only received, but used on a broader scale?
We want it to be sort of the first film of its kind in the mental health field to take a stab at all of these different communities, you know, to cover the challenges faced by the LGBT community, the challenges faced by veterans, by college students, by firearm owners. Firearm suicide, suicide by firearm in America is a huge problem. So kind of bringing those communities into one room to watch this film, these very disparate people, you know, watching, having veterans of the Iraq War and Vietnam veterans come into the same theater as leaders of the LGBT community and kind of sitting there and watching each other's stories. You don't see a lot of that. And that was something that we really set out to do, was to open up these stories to audiences that really, you know, previously would have no vested interest or experience, and kind of, you know, somebody that's interested in seeing the veteran story would, you know, leave having their minds open to these other stories as well. So just having that major goal of destigmatizing this issue and opening up the conversation and encouraging audiences to talk about this and kind of break out of that mental health field and break out of those audiences that, you know, kind of already a vested interest in the subject and kind of get it into the mainstream and into the public eye. I think, I mean, that's absolutely our main goal, is to just start that discussion and make sure that mental health and suicide is something we can all talk about with each other, you know, boldly and courageously. And we shouldn't, you know, it shouldn't be something that we sort of talk about in whispers. So, and as far as just kind of long-term goals for the film itself, I think, you know, now the next step is to get a sales agent and kind of go down this other sort of intimidating uphill battle of getting it, selling it onto, you know, streaming platform, you know, whether it's Hulu or Netflix or Showtime or HBO, but get that sales agent on board and convince that person that this is a film worth selling and worth sharing.
I think one thing that you brought up that's so interesting to me, and I kind of got that sense watching the film as well, was this idea of bringing groups of people together who maybe wouldn't have any other reason to come together in the first place were it not for their support of or their linkage to this greater issue. And then having come together, they're now sharing stories with one another, learning from one another, and having their eyes open to each other. And I think there are a lot of parallels between that piece of the film and what's going on in our society right now, with a countrywide discussion about race and racism, bringing together people from different communities and backgrounds to discuss and to learn from one another. And I just think there are certainly things that we can pull from the film and apply to the conversation that we're all having right now about racism in America. And I think it's one of the beautiful things about the film.
Absolutely. Yeah. Thank you for saying that, Shu. And I'll first say, you know, mental health disparity country is very much a economic and racial disparity problem as well. So I think you're absolutely right in that these issues are all intertwined. And I'm glad you bring attention to the fact that, you know, there are elements of our film that are totally about people, you know, this is primarily the firearm narrative, where, you know, you couldn't think of a more hot button issue than gun ownership in America. And as filmmakers, you know, walking that line was one thing, but a whole different ballgame for these people that are on the front lines wanting to fix this issue. And one of the things that we cover in our film are these academics, kind of liberal folks from Harvard University coming on the ground and working with the gun lobby and firearm rights ownership groups and Republican politicians and Democratic politicians, and completely throwing politics out the window to sit at the table and figure this issue out. And instead of isolating, you know, the gun community, which I think is an easy thing to do if you look at, you know, suicide rates and say, oh, well, you know, half the people in this country are using firearms. Let's take away these, or find a creative way to get firearms out of the hands of suicidal people. I think that that's great, but that's not going to happen. And what Kathy Barber from Harvard in the film realizes, and kind of her life's mission, is that's not going to happen without bringing that community into the discussion. So I think that it's a super important and timely lesson in the film about, yeah, us all coming together under the common goal and kind of looking at the data and the hard numbers and the facts, which is another thing that I think has seen better days in this country, is just kind of looking at data and facts and looking at things for exactly as they are. And I think that you're seeing that a lot in the mental health and suicide prevention field. And I think that it's absolutely a lesson that can be taken away and applied to, you know, most aspects of our society.
No doubt. One of the things that I personally enjoyed in the film was hearing your voice asking some of the questions of the people whose stories you told, particularly those who were dealing with mental health issues or who had survived a suicide attempt. And I just have to imagine that that was a truly powerful and emotion-filled experience for you throughout the course of shooting this film. As the director of the film, you talked a little bit about what a director does at the top of the show. But for this film in particular, what was your role in sort of creating this piece?
Yeah, this is totally one of those examples when I say directing can be anything from managing departments to doing everything you kind of yourself. You know, we had a very, very small crew, real skeleton operation going into these places. And yeah, so I did, you know, asking the questions did fall on me. And I have a writer credit on that, on the film as well, for that reason, you know, because as you're making a documentary, you kind of have to figure out the right questions to, you know, yield the right answers that are going to, you know, eventually become the sort of script of your movie. And you mentioned it was, you know, it must have been pretty heavy, and it definitely was in a lot of circumstances. I think our veteran clinician that we have in the film, Dr. Craig Bryan, he says at the end of the movie, he has this great line where he says, a lot of people ask me if this work is depressing and how depressing it must be to have this job. And he says, you know, I've never found it depressing, because when you're saving lives every day, you know, and you're able to reach your arm down and kind of bring somebody up who's in the depths of despair and suicidal, there's nothing more uplifting than work like that. And that's sort of how I felt on the job. I'm certainly not doing the work that Dr. Bryan is doing, you know, but I think I was able to go home after or go to our Airbnb or wherever, where I was able to leave set every day feeling like very uplifted by the solutions that are being offered, or very touched by the stories being shared. And it was absolutely emotional and sad at times, but never did the film kind of weigh me down in its content in that way. I think we all felt, all the filmmakers felt, we were doing something uplifting the whole time.
And of course, one of the big parts of this film is loss and dealing with loss, particularly the families who lost their college-age sons to suicide, and then how they sort of use that loss as a jumping-off point to create more awareness about mental illness, to develop resources and foundations aimed at ending the suicide epidemic and educating people and empowering people. And Nate, personally for you, you have endured a significant amount of loss in your life, not necessarily to suicide, but your older brother, Alex, who was such an influence in your life and in your passion for this career, he passed away in your late teen years. And then your father passed away recently as well in the midst of creating this film. And I'm curious how dealing with the losses of your brother and your dad, two men who are such role models for you, how did that inspire and maybe influence the way you approached creating this documentary?
Yeah, I would say that sort of journey and mindset began when I lost my brother Alex when I was 18 years old and senior in high school, and he was at Savannah College of Art and Design, and he died in a car accident. And my dad sort of at the time was leaving Rogers Townsend, the agency that he had started in St. Louis, and one of the passions that he shared with my brother was piano playing, and he started this foundation called Pianos for People in my brother's honor, and sort of dedicated what would be the rest of his life to getting pianos and refurbishing them and putting them into underprivileged homes, and also offering free lessons and pianos to, you know, communities around St. Louis. So I think that he had, after my brother died, my dad experienced what a lot of people experience after a significant loss, and that is, you know, you're hearing a lot from a lot of people, you know, good will come out of this, you know, there will be positive, You know, God has a reason, et cetera, et cetera. And I think what I learned from my dad is he didn't wait around for that to happen. He didn't wait around to let the good come from the loss of my brother. He went out and made that good and made sure that my brother's life and death would have direct meaning and change and save the lives of others. You absolutely see that in the film as well, in the case of, you know, Michael Ziblich, who lost his son Keller and was faced with that same dilemma and chose to, instead of kind of curling up and giving up life, going out and instead saving others. And that was his only son. And I lost my dad in October to cancer, and it was a incredibly fast moving cancer. He was dead 2 weeks after his diagnosis. So it was a very sudden passing, and one that was certainly shocking, you know, especially you know, to me, him and I very much collaborated on all this work, and he was always kind of my confidant when it came to all things film production and life and you know, and everything. He was, you know, absolutely my best friend. So I was in the midst of making Wake Up, or at least kind of finishing it. He did get a chance to see the last cut. But as far as how I push myself forward and continue diving headfirst into meaningful work is exactly taking the playbook that my dad sort of naturally followed when losing my brother. And, you know, now the work that I do, I hope to continue doing meaningful work, is absolutely and very much in my dad's name and in his honor. And instead of, you know, kind of sitting back and waiting to find the good of this totally senseless situation, I try to do my best, and it's much easier said than done, but I try to do my best to go out and make that good, whether it's a project that I'm working in, how I treat other people, you know, how I carry myself, the values of family and faith and the truly important things in life. I try to live those things very much in his name and in his honor. And I think that that's something that you see in throughout Wake Up as well, and something that I hope to carry with me going into the future.
That's truly amazing. I really appreciate your honesty and sharing that with us and everyone who's listening to this show. Obviously, as you've talked about, not only in that last answer, but then earlier on when you were discussing how you got into this business in the first place and sort of looking up to your brother and looking up to your dad and seeing how those two interacted around their passion for creative work and in particular storytelling, it's clear that those two have had a significant impact on your career as a director. And I know that during the quarantine, you started writing a script, influenced by the period in your life immediately following your dad's passing. And when we were chatting, you had mentioned to me that you felt like you had hoped at least that this would be one of your next big projects and a project that would be produced truly in their honor.
Yeah, after losing my brother and then after losing my dad and the events that happened sort of in my dad's life that we haven't covered, that, you know, I think that there have been an abnormal amount of loss that I've experienced and just kind of other moments of adversity that have been, you know, really big that I've had to overcome. And I've always kind of known I have a story here, but never known quite how to tell it. And, you know, everybody at film school, the teachers tell you that, you know, write your own story is the best kind of easiest way to put pen to paper and really find a character. And that's something that I've been kind of largely had avoided until COVID, and COVID happened, and I kind of ran out of things to work on and just kind of got to writing and And what I focused on in this film was the five to six day drive from St. Louis out to LA, in which after the 2 or 3 months I stayed in St. Louis after losing my dad, I took his car and drove it out to LA, where it's now my car. And I made that drive with his childhood best friend from Jacksonville, Florida, who's now, you know, in his 60s, and in the wake of my dad's passing, very much, you know, asking a lot of those questions about legacy and meaning of life, and sort of I tell people the story, and he was a musician, a lifelong musician. Walter, he is a lifelong musician, my dad's best friend, and he knew kind of secrets of that road trip that were just really interesting, and sort of both of us kind of grappling with my dad's death and figuring out in our own ways, and also kind of trying to help each other through the loss, and, you know, kind of the meaning of legacy and home and family and what's really important. I think that Walter and I shared a lot of really, really significant moments. And I've told that story to some people, and it would take three other podcasts for me to completely get through it. But, you know, that I should write that down and I should make that into a movie. And I was kind of like, you know, what the hell, I'll give it a try. And I sat down on my computer and, you know, busted out like 120 pages in the course of a month, which is just way more than I've ever able to write when I'm sitting down and I'm working on other features or other projects. It totally wrote itself and was also, you know, incredibly therapeutic for me. And then I'm also, you know, now kind of it's turned into something, you know, from something more memoirish and journalistic to, you know, I'm now sort of sculpting it into what I believe will, you know, be a good film, hopefully be a good movie. And so as people are asking me what my next project is after Wake Up, and that is something, you know, that I'm being asked a lot, now I have an answer to that. And I didn't before COVID. And I hope that, I mean, Shu, with this podcast, you're doing your part, and you're using this time productively and in a really meaningful way. And this podcast has certainly been, you know, something for me to escape to so far. And I think, you know, the writing the film has been that to me. And I think that COVID has forced all of us to kind of reconsider this path that we're all on, and kind of have to scramble. And eventually, you know, this thing is lasting so long, we're all forced to take a step back and really think about what's important and what we can be doing that's productive that isn't being handed to us, and how can we create, you know, what are ways to remain productive. So I hope that film that I wrote, which I don't think I ever really would have written if it wasn't for COVID, you know, this podcast and other endeavors by, you know, creative people, and just everyone's forced to kind of press the reset button on their life. Hopefully this time can be, you know, something that's productive for everybody and our society as a whole.
That road trip journey with your dad's best friend, Walter, over 5 or 6 days in your dad's car back out to LA. I can't even imagine the stories that you guys were able to share with one another. It sounds like an amazing experience, and the fact that you've now written about it, I'm really looking forward to when that script becomes a movie and that movie hits the screen. Something that I find so fascinating about that trip with Walter, and you touched on it a little bit, but you and I also talked about it before we jumped on the show, was that through that 5 or 6 day journey, you guys had an opportunity, while dealing with the loss of your dad, his best friend, you had the opportunity to talk about, share, reflect on what is most important in your lives. And I'm curious for you, Nate, you know, somebody who is so all in on pursuing this passion of filmmaking and of storytelling and using that platform to create meaning, and share meaningful stories with people, how do you balance your passion for that with the other things in your life that are so important to you?
Yeah, that's a great question. And yeah, that's absolutely something that the film explores, is that, so I mean, it's sort of cliche, and you kind of have to really dig into it to find the substance. But, you know, really what is our life's purpose, and what does give us meaning in life? And I think, you know, yeah, it's very kind of broad thought, but I think it's super important that you know, you have a big dream, Chu, and I certainly do, and I know a whole lot of other people that want certain things for their life. And I think at the end of the day, I'll say this, you know, my dad leaves behind a hell of a legacy when it comes to his advertising agency, Pianos for People, and the work that he's done in St. Louis and the community here. But when you talk with people and really about what his legacy is, it's always about how he made people feel and how he inspired others to sort of carry on these values and ethics and carrying themselves with real kindness and respect for others. And that's what he's, you know, at the end of the day, that's what he's remembered for, is he always made people feel like they were his best friend and like they were, you know, really had meaning on this, you know, on this world. And I think, you know, that's that sort of idea of focusing on carrying yourself with those values or whatever, you know, set of values are important to you. That's what's going to be most important. And I think along the way, when you can kind of suck others into your orbit a little bit, you know, and I think it's, you know, to some people it's important to have, you know, family and kids, and to others it's not. I think to me, knowing how important family was to my dad, and the sort of domino effect that his life has had on me and others, and how that's been made possible by this, you know, amazing family that he's been able to have, and his father before him, is something that I now, you know, is something that's very palpable to me right now and very tangible, and something that I've been thinking a lot about. So I'd say, you know, just the idea of legacy not being something that you can feel or touch or look at, but really be deeper than that, the ways that you have touched people and made people feel.
That is beautifully said. You know, I want to finish with a couple of questions, turning back to your career and the dream and the vision that you're pursuing. You know, so often in the entertainment industry and the creative industry, when you're getting your start, you're sacrificing a lot for the pursuit of your dream. And for most of us, it's a sacrifice worth making because we just enjoy so much what we do every day. I know that's definitely the case for me. And so I was willing to look the other way when it came to, you know, finding a place to live on a, you know, annual income of $12,500 a year the first year and a half I graduated from college. I'm sure that you have had similar experiences, especially early in your career when you were just trying to break through and you were taking any project on just to get your name out there and get some credibility. What experience comes to mind for you in terms of kind of sacrificing that, you know, comfort, I guess, for the pursuit of this dream, this vision that you have?
Yeah, I mean, I think, I mean, one thing that, again, to bring my dad back into this, maybe one more time, we'll see. But one thing that he would tell me, and my mom has told me over and over again, is you know, my dad never thought about the money, or never made decisions really based on money. And that's so kind of backwards, but it's always based on opportunity and what's going to bring you kind of life fulfillment. And so those sacrifices, so kind of, I have it burnt into me that the money will come, you know, if you kind of continue down that path and continue betting on yourself and what you're doing when you're living, you know, on $12,500 a year and whatever apartment you can find as you're pursuing your dream. You know, you're investing in yourself. And I think that I'm going to be continuing to invest in myself my entire career. I think the best example of that is probably doing Wake Up and, you know, making a very similar amount of money as that $12,500 and trying to live off of that.
The difference, Nate, is that you were living in LA and at the time, right, you were making 12 and a half. It's, oh man, I was living harder. In the Midwest.
Right. No, it was even harder. I think I care so much about getting there, and what does getting there even mean to me? I don't really even know. I redefine it every day. But I'm so obsessed with making a living doing this thing that I love. And I'm so obsessed with that all other things kind of have to come second. And I've been blessed enough to, one, come from, privileged family who've been incredibly supportive of me as I, kind of first started that pursuit, not that they were paying my rent, but I always felt like I could, have something to fall back on, and I didn't have a ton of debt, so I did have kind of the privilege to pursue this for a bit. But even if I didn't have that, I think all things come second to that passion and drive and desire to make a living as a film director. That's just something that I've always, always, always wanted. So money has just never been about the money. And that was something that has always been preached to me. And I think that if you're good at what you do and you believe in yourself and you have endurance and perseverance and you keep it up and you keep going and you get knocked down and you keep getting back up and you keep taking those at bats, you're eventually going to find yourself in a place where you're way more financially comfortable than you might have been, towards the beginning. So that has certainly been the case during my journey. It's a feast or famine in this industry. And obviously I prefer to feast, but, no matter what, I'm waking up every single day loving what I do, loving the people that I've surrounded myself with in life. And you can't put a price on that.
I totally agree. I'm with you there 100%. We are very, very fortunate and blessed, as you say, to be making our life's work something that we're passionate about, something that we truly have a love for, and that loves us back. As we continue to work hard, the fruits of our labor and the fruits of the labor of those who have helped us along the way just continue to blossom, and that makes it all the more fulfilling for sure. One thing that I find so interesting that you mentioned a minute ago was your drive to get there, to get somewhere, and where that is, you don't know, and you kind of redefine it every single day. So I'm going to ask you the tough question: what is there for you? What is the ultimate vision for Nate Townsend's life and Nate Townsend's career, I guess, more specifically as a director?
Yeah, I mean, I think we all have, all of us in pursuing creative paths and paths like the ones we have. I may have the vision of walking down the red carpet at the Oscars. You might have yours, covering the Super Bowl in 10 years. I think that we all have that, all of us in these sort of fields have that sort of pinnacle of like, man, I would love to be there. That's there, but I've had moments throughout my short career so far where I have said, Nate, you're there, already, I'll take a check to the bank and be like, I'm making a living doing this, as things continue to happen for me and doors hopefully continue to open, I'll continue to raise that bar and hopefully it, will be eventually, that Oscar speech moment that every filmmaker dreams about. But I think on that journey, the only way to get there is by making realistic and calculated steps and kind of, a lot of the sacrifices that we were just talking about. And then one day you'll wake up and you're kind of there. And that's already happened to me in my life to an extent, And when I was in college, I really wanted to be a film director. It was a dream of mine just to do that, and then I woke up and I was there. And I think I'm sure, Matt, you have had similar moments. I've had moments watching you on TV and broadcasting sports and being like, man, he's there. He made it. I think the way I think it's important that we have those just crazy dreams, certainly I'd love to be making feature films for studios and getting paid millions of dollars and walking the red carpet at the Oscars. That's where I want to be. But until that day, I'm going to be taking kind of realistic steps in my life to kind of move towards that tip of the mountain.
That is just such a great point. It's all about perspective, appreciating totally. Where yep. you are, along the way while also striving and pushing for more. And that more is the pushing for better from yourself. And what does that look like? And that's constantly changing. And so there's this constant change and evolution of what the next vision is, all the while having that crazy dream at the top of the pyramid, so to speak. And then one day, because you've gone about it the right way, you end up there. But you've been fulfilled along the way by the process.
Yeah, and I think, you know, you don't want to torture yourself with that. You know, that's why I think having those kind of small step dreams and being able to wake up every day and be grateful for what you have and is good, because and that's actually what my next film will hopefully, you know, it aims to explore, is that idea of what having that dream and kind of being tortured by your definition of what success is. And as you're chasing that, you know, you sort of lose sight of everything else, you know. So the film that I'm writing is very much, you know, kind of aligned with the discussion we're having now.
And that will be a fascinating film. Again, I can't wait for the script to make its way onto the screen and then be published for all of us to see. The film that's out right now, though, is called Wake Up: Stories from the Front Lines of Suicide Prevention. It is highly critically acclaimed. It's a tremendous, emotional, empowering watch. Nate, if folks listening want to watch it, where can they find it?
So right now it's not publicly available. However, if anybody wanted to send me an email or go to my website, natetownsend.com, and email me and tell me a bit about yourself and your story, and I'd love for you to see it. We're kind of in that difficult position now where we kind of have to wait out the next few months as we seek distribution. However, we are going to be doing a theatrical screening in July. Well, I don't know now that COVID is happening how that's going to live. It may be digital now, but there are film festivals that we have committed to that we're going to be kind of screening to throughout the year. But if they're, you know, to your listeners, please, you know, shoot Matt a DM, shoot me a DM. I'd be happy to get you the film.
Yeah, I highly recommend definitely looking up Project Wake Up and the original documentary that Nate directed many, many years ago is actually available on the website. And that was sort of the impetus for this longer documentary feature that's now getting such wide critical acclaim. And it's really cool to see, not only from my point of view as your friend and kind of seeing how this is a breakthrough project for you, but also seeing how important it is to our global society and how important it is to sort of breaking down some of the barriers for those in our country who are suffering from mental illness. And, you know, as you talked about a little bit ago, you know, having this dream of walking down the red carpet at the Oscars, I don't know if I'm going to see you there, but I would love to see you at the ESPYs one day, me and you both. Right. On the red carpet out in LA. It's kind of your neck of the woods. And there's always film people that go to the ESPYs, right?
I was gonna throw ESPYs out there. I didn't know how high an achievement that would be, but I knew that was up there. ESPYs would be pretty freaking sweet. Hopefully I direct a 30 for 30, and you narrate it, and we get there together.
Oh, unfortunately, now we're talking.
The McGuire Sosa story is off the table, unfortunately, now, but there's, you know, many, many, many others. We'll do David Freeze.
I know. I need to go.
World Series run.
I need to go watch that. As a couple of kids that grew up in St. Louis in the height of the Big Mac hype, I need to go see that. But I am absolutely in for voicing over a 30 for 30 that you direct.
It's happening. It'll happen.
I love it. Nate Townsend, thank you so much for coming on the Coming Up Show.
Matt, thanks so much, buddy. I really appreciate it. Love you. And thank you to your audience for tuning in.
Love you too, brother. All the best.